It's another episode of One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. Thanks for listening. Presented by SodaStick. Check out SodaStick.com to get your original Minnesota-inspired goods. Use code One-on-One for 15% off. Well, the Minnesota Wild are sort of hovering around 500. The big storyline, obviously, since the coaching change and the recent improved play under John Hines has been the injury bug. The Wild just, they can't stay healthy. Handful of players on injured reserve. I think Michael Russo from The Athletic the other day said $50 million, basically not in the lineup when you include the Zach Parise and Ryan Suter buyout cap hits as well. So Kaprizov, Spurgeon, Zuccarello, Brodin, Philip Gustafson, the number one goaltender going into the year. So right now it's the Iowa Wild, essentially, in a lot of ways, playing in Minnesota. The Iowa Wild's three top scorers are up. Arguably their two best defensemen, one of their goaltenders, and Zane McIntyre right now with the big club. So the Wild are just going to have to battle through this. Good news is that, you know, late January, you get the All-Star break, you get the bye week, and the schedule, if you look on paper, does lighten up a bit February, March, April as far as tough opponents. Now, that's not to say, you know, look, in the NHL, any team can win any given night. We've seen it. But there are a few games against San Jose and Anaheim and Chicago and some other sort of bottom feeders currently in the NHL that the Wild hopefully can take advantage of if they're at least in a position to be hanging around a playoff spot if they can get through this rash of injuries. So it is crazy right now. It seems like every game somebody is getting hurt, somebody else is being added to the IR. But John Hines is a coach that has coached under this circumstance previously in his career. He talked about Nashville, especially at the tail end of last year, a ton of injuries. They were playing and trades, right? They were sellers at the deadline last year with the Predators, and John Hines kept that Preds team in the playoff mix until the final days of the regular season with largely what you'd consider an American Hockey League lineup, plus, of course, all-world goaltender Yusei Saros. That was last year in Nashville. Hopefully, Hines can pull from some of those experiences. Hopefully, the players continue to buy in, play the right way, strong defensive hockey, and find a way to hang around a playoff spot until they can get healthy and hopefully stay healthy. Especially with the recent injuries to Kaprizov and Gustafson, both up in Winnipeg, and then Spurgeon, sort of a surprise IR stint. He's been out now a few times this year, missing 20-plus games. So it's been a tough go for the Wild from that regard, but give them credit. They've hung around a playoff spot to this point and right around that 500 mark. Really excited for another episode of One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. The Professional Women's Hockey League is underway, right? Their inaugural season. The six inaugural teams, it kicked off earlier this week, and the Minnesota Club played its first game just last night. They won 3-2 in Boston, so congrats to them, and I'm really thrilled to bring you my guest today. It's their new head coach, Ken Klee, the former NHL defenseman. So hope you enjoy this interview. Ken Klee from PWHL Minnesota, longtime NHL blue liner, my guest today on One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. As mentioned, my guest today on One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell is the former National Hockey League defenseman and now the head coach of the PWHL Minnesota Club, Ken Klee, kind enough to join me here for a couple of minutes. Just named the head coach on December the 27th, first game under his belt last night, a win, a 3-2 W in Boston. Ken, thanks for doing this. How are you?
Absolutely. Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the win last night. Let's start there. You guys get off on the right foot, I guess. You get a 3-2 win. You're 1-0 on the season. How'd it feel? What was the game like?
It was great. You know what? To be honest with you, the atmosphere in the building was terrific. I mean, there was been close to 8,000 people there. You know, it was an exciting hockey game. It was good. You know, for me as a coach, it's we had some moments where we definitely have some work to do, which is exciting because, you know, I coach to try to help players become better, and definitely we have some room for improvement. So I'm really excited where this group can take off to.
PWHL Minnesota's first home game is coming up this weekend at XL Energy Center. Some folks might be listening to this after the fact, but either way, just know that January 6th is the first home game against Montreal. How excited is your team for the home opener?
Oh, I think, you know, the players are super excited. Obviously, we have a good number of players from the Minnesota area, the Minneapolis area. So I think they're over the moon excited. You know, it's a tough turnaround. They're getting their first taste of real pro hockey where you play on a Wednesday night. You get up at 4 a.m. and take a flight home and then, you know, practice Friday and ready to go Saturday afternoon. So it's definitely a different vibe than like college that they played before where they just play Fridays and Saturdays and then they have all week off. you know, we're much more in a pro schedule. We're playing, you know, Wednesday, Saturday kind of thing.
And talking with your PR staff and Joe Anderson, he mentioned that you guys had a 7 a.m. morning skate. Was that really on the itinerary the other day?
That was on the itinerary. I used a little better judgment and just said, okay, we'll let a couple of players who will not be dressing that night go out for a skate. But yeah, again, we didn't get into our hotel. We landed in Boston. By the time we got to the hotel, it was 9 o'clock, had dinner. It's 9:30, 10. So, yeah, I kind of, we gave an optional on that one pretty much. It's usually an optional, but you know, I definitely said, okay, girls, I want you to stay back, get some rest, get focused for, puck drop 7 o'clock.
Yeah. I'm assuming because you're playing a lot of times in other, you know, NHL buildings or venues with other tenants, you're not always going to have the say on ice time and schedule of games, all that stuff. Is that fair where you guys sometimes will have to play second fiddle and maybe get dealt with tougher travel or tougher ice times?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. You know, us being out here in Minneapolis, we're definitely going to have the toughest travel schedule because everybody else is kind of centrally located in the East. So travel-wise, we definitely have the toughest. But and then on the arenas, you know, this first year, we seem to be – from what I can tell from the schedule that obviously I just got less than a week ago, we're playing in a lot of different rinks. Last night we were in UMass Lowell's rink. So again, like they have their men's and women's, I think D1 teams there, as well as, you know, now they have PWHL Boston there. So, but they were kind of setting up and everything's just hitting the ground. You know, I think everyone's just trying to help and do the best they can, but obviously there's going to be a few hiccups. And like you said, a 7 a.m. Morning skate is one of those hiccups. So we'll try to get all that stuff worked out as we get going.
How's the last week or so been for you personally? I'm guessing a bit of a whirlwind, but what can you share with our listeners about finding out that Charlie Burggraf was stepping down, the opportunity was open in Minnesota, and just days before their first game, you're at the helm trying to sort everything out?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it has been a whirlwind, but it's certainly been an exciting one. I mean, I've said several times now that because of my experience of being the national team head coach, I'm kind of used to this short time frame because basically the national team gets together, you have about a week of practice, and then you're playing for a medal. And if you lose a game, have one off night, I mean, your chances could go by the wayside. So I'm kind of used to that, you know, short dynamic. It's obviously, it's been a lot, you know, moving and everything, and it all happened fast. Luckily, I had kind of been through the interview process with the league, with Natalie, you know, earlier before all the coaches were named. So I think that helped give us a little bit of comfortability for Natalie and, you know, and for me too, knowing this is the GM I'm going to work with to try to, you know, help these players be the best team we can be and try to be, you know, just putting on a great product every night.
Having coached the Team USA women before, knowing the women's game, having somebody like Natalie Darwitz as the GM of the club, how much can you rely on her and that relationship there to make sure that everything's buttoned up and that you guys were ready to go, in such a short span?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt. I mean, she's obviously a legend here in Minnesota, as well as, you know, USA Hockey, women's hockey in general. So, you know, she put together a good team, you know, and that's, again, that's kind of the similar fashion that I had with USA Hockey. I rarely had it wasn't like I had the say of picking all the players kind of thing. It was, you know, here's your players, coach, go coach them up and try to win a gold medal. So it's exciting. I'm excited to work with her. I do have a little bit of familiarity with, you know, I think four or five players that actually played for me on the national team, Kendall Coyne, Lee Steckline, Kelly Panic, Nicole Hensley. So, you know, just to name a few, but, you know, having those as my leaders and now as our captains of this team, you know, it definitely helps to, they know what my expectations are every day. You know, they know what kind of energy I'm going to bring. So now it's just about getting everybody else up to speed as fast as possible.
Describe your coaching style, maybe some key philosophies that you'll try and put forth in this hockey club.
I think, you know, the biggest thing is playing with the puck, you know, using our skill set, you know, puck possession, speed, you know, all the things that make today's game so great. You know, and these girls have those skills. They have great speed. They have, you know, good puck skills. So to me, that's the kind of style I want to play. But, you know, with this league, you know, I've talked to several of my buddies and kind of counterparts about, it's pretty amazing that every team has you know, 6 to 8 national team players between the U.S. and Canada and between, you know, some of the European nations. So it's not really a case of where we're just, you know, really trying to gear up for 1 or 2 big games a year kind of thing, because it's going to be a tight game every night. So, which to me makes it super exciting. I think it's great for the players. I think it's great for the fans. You know, it's certainly good for me as a coach to know that, hey, we have to be on our game every night, you know, similar to the NHL. If you have an off night, you're not winning. So, you know, we're in a very similar situation here where there is a lot of parity because of the way they did the draft, the way they only could sign 3 players, which again, it makes it a great product. I mean, it's so awesome for the women and for the game in general that it's really a great product.
How do you hope the team plays once they're really rolling and the season is a handful of games in?
I'm a big believer in culture and everyday habits. And when we have our everyday habits, I preach them every day in practice, preach them every game. When we're living up to those, you know, it's kind of a reminder to how we want to play. Every single player, top to bottom, they need to bring those things. That's how they're being evaluated every day. I found it worked very well in the men's pro game. So, you know, it certainly will work in the women's as well. They're great people. They want to get better, which is, you know, as a coach, all you can ask.
When did you first get involved in women's hockey?
I think it was the summer of, it would have been the summer of 14. I received a phone call just saying, hey, you know, we've got an opening for an August camp. We're going to have somewhere between 65 and 80 players coming in. Would I be interested? And, you know, as a coach, I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Like, you know, I don't really know. I didn't know then much about the women's game. I didn't know any of the players. I have 3 sons, you know, 2 of whom, one just graduated after playing 4 years of college. The other one's played, he's on his 5th year of college now, playing at Ohio State. And my youngest is in Muskegon. He'll be at North Dakota next year. So, but it was exciting. You know what I mean? It was something different, something new. My first call, to be honest, was to Pierre Turgeon, and I know his daughters had been in the game and played, and you know, he had coached, because I had coached against them around Denver. And he was like, listen, Kenny, they're hockey players. They're awesome people. They want to get better. You will love it. So to me, that was kind of my first thing. So I went, I said, yeah, I'll come to the camp. And they asked, you know, what I would like to do. And I said, hey, if I'm coming, I'll take what you'll give me. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be put in a head coaching position for a U-22 team. That went extremely well. We swept Canada 3 straight. And then I was asked to move on as the national team head coach. So it kind of all just happened. It worked out well. I could still coach my own kids and their teams, as well as, you know, because with the national team, you're kind of every 3 or 4 months, you get together for, you know, 3 weeks kind of thing. So it's definitely unique in the hockey world.
Talk about your respect and appreciation for the women's game. It sounds like you kind of went into it, as you just said, not knowing a whole lot about it. And I'm sure over time now that's changed a lot.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, I quickly, you know, I was trying to, you know, figure out how this was all going to work. You know, to know that these women, you know, train every day like NHLers, you know, put, you know, their blood, sweat, and tears every day in trying to get better, just like NHLers and all that. And back then it was for really no pay. I mean, even the national team players had a very small stipend. There really wasn't anything for them to keep going. And, you know what I mean? Just to be able to train like an NHLer just for the love of the game, I was over the moon impressed. I mean, it was phenomenal to see how much time, effort they put in, how they wanted to get better every day. And as a coach, that's all you can ask. When you have people who want to get better every day, take in what you give them, you know, try to process it and give it back to you as best as they can. You know, it was just an awesome, fantastic experience.
For me personally, watching Team USA and Team Canada and the previous Olympics and World Championships has always been sort of must-see TV because of the rivalry there, because of the skill level. What have you seen about the, you know, regards to the impact that Team USA's success on the women's side and the men's side, really, it's had on the youth game and the development of hockey as a whole in the United States in recent years?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tremendous. I mean, you when you have, you know, your whole country cheering for you come Olympic time, and to be able to see that competitive of a of an atmosphere of a sport, you know, everyone rallies, right? I remember when I was a kid, the 80 Olympic team, whether you're a hockey fan or not, you became a hockey fan after watching that. So to me, that's really where, you know, the women's game has gotten. And, you know, I'm, to be honest with you, I'm hopeful that some other countries can kind of keep building up their program. So it's not just a two-team race to see who's going to win a gold medal. So I think with this league, I think it'll help push. We obviously have several European players that are tremendous. And I'm, you know, I'm so excited to see them play with the, you know, see Susanna Tapani play with Kendall Coyne, with Taylor Heisey, with, you know, Kelly Panic, you know, to see how good she can be, because she's never had those other pieces around her before, you know? So it's, again, it's just, it's super exciting. You know, it's a thing where before it was every 4 years, you know, you have that gold medal game that the whole country is watching. But I'm really excited with this league because, you know, people are going to see it's ultra competitive every night. And the parity is across the board, which in sport is awesome to see. You don't like seeing, you know, one-sided games. You want to see people compete and be right down to the wire.
You mentioned a couple of your maybe more heralded name players, but some ladies to watch as this season moves along. Is there anybody else sort of under the radar on the roster this year that you're excited to maybe get a little bit more of a national name for themselves?
Yeah, well, I mean, Taylor Heisey obviously is she's a rookie. She was the first overall pick in the draft. She's won the Patty Kaz. You know, I'm excited to get to work with her, to get to coach her, to try to see how good she can really become. I think she was obviously super dominant in college, which it's impressive to keep pushing yourself when you are dominating the way she did. So it's full kudos for her. But now, you know, she's playing, you know, she's with the big girls now. So it's she knows she has to be on every shift, every game, every practice, or else she is just becoming an average player. And I think for her, after sitting down with her, I think her goal is to be the most dominant player in the world, which, you know, again, is just awesome to see how much better she can really get and just kind of help her to try to reach those goals.
I watched that, the highlight of her goal, the first one for your new franchise last night, a nice wrist shot underneath the bar. Is that sort of her game, speed and coming off the rush and not afraid to rip it?
Yeah, she's got speed. She's got skills. She has size. I mean, she has the whole package. Now it's just about, you know, putting it all together. You know, it becomes a mental game. I mean, I think there's no question when you look at NHL players, which people are obviously more familiar with, you know, the difference between them and a lot of their teammates over the years is, you know, could they put their mental game together to be able to do it every night, every day? You know, there's no question in my mind. I got to play in the NHL for a long time because of those reasons. So, you know, again, with her, it's going to be her mental. Can she, you know, ride the wave of trying to get better and everything and to keep going. So it's really, to me, sky's the limit for her, but I'm excited because she does have the whole package. I mean, she can skate, she can rip it like we saw last night. She, you know, she has a little grit to her game, which is exciting to watch. She's, you know, she's big, strong, physical. She comes from a family of athletes, all college athletes. I think she told me both her parents were college athletes. Her brothers were college athletes. So, you know, she definitely has it in her. So it's just really cool to see.
How about between the pipes? What are you guys looking at this year?
Well, Nicole Hensley is a former Olympian. She played lights out last night. I mean, she was definitely a difference maker for us. You know, she's definitely there. Then we've got Maddie Rooney. You know, she's won a gold medal for the national team. She's right there. Amanda Levalier, you know, a former Gopher. She's won, I think, 3 national titles and 2 ISO Cups. I mean, she knows how to win. So, you know, with those 3, and then we have Lauren Bench, another solid goalie, is kind of a reserve. Like, you know, those 3, it'll be interesting to see who, you know, I told them when I announced Nicole as a starter, I said, hey, it's going to be a competitive group, you 3. And, you know, when you get a chance to take the ball, like, you know, we're counting on you.
Ken, you've been rattling off accolades from, it seems like, everybody on the roster that you've mentioned so far. How important is that winning pedigree that these ladies have had at other points in their career and the leadership elements that come with it in trying to build the right culture for PWHL Minnesota?
Yeah, no, I think it's paramount. I mean, in naming Kendall Coyne our captain, she's phenomenal top to bottom. She's a great person, great leader. She's been through it. You know, then we add in there Lee Steckline, awesome human being. She's won. She's played in many Olympics. She's an outstanding person, outstanding player. Kelly Panik, same thing. Played in the Olympics, won medals. You know, to have those guys kind of as our core leaders, and then, you know, then we have a, you know, some rookies. You know, we have the Brooke Burks, and we have, you know, we have I'm just trying to think off the top of my head here, you know, Natalie Muckbinders. You know, she's been a little bit of national team, but she's young. I mean, we have a good mix of older players, younger players, players who have played for some good coaches. You know, played at Wisconsin, played at Mankato, played at the U. You know, kind of across the board. So to me, it's just a really exciting group. But again, like you said, to have leaders, you know, like Kendall Lee, Kelly, you know, Nicole in the net, Maddie in the net. Like, I mean, it's exciting for the team and, you know, to really start this franchise off the right way.
Where are you going to live in Minnesota? I'm assuming it'll be somewhat temporary as far as living here. Maybe I'm wrong there. And what did you know about the great state of hockey before you got into town?
Well, I grew up a little bit in Kansas City, so we would come up and play youth hockey up here. Obviously, once my career started going, we used to have what were they called? Sports festivals, where we would have, you know, players north, south, east, west from all the colleges come together. Obviously, there was always a good amount of Minnesota-born players there, whether they were playing at the U or Duluth or Mankato or Northern Michigan or Michigan or wherever they were. You know, they, you know, you just look at the numbers for Minnesota hockey in general. They're huge across the board, which is awesome for the sport. As far as me, yeah, I mean, my home is Denver. And it's been my home since my first son was born in 98. It'll always be my home. But, you know, we're just excited to get set up with an apartment here. My wife's going to commute. We're empty nesters now, which is a pretty exciting time in our life. So my wife can commute back and forth. I'll be here primarily, you know, during the entire season and just, you know, enjoying, loving coaching, helping players get better, which is now, you know, I was fortunate enough to get to play a long time. A lot of people helped me. And that's definitely my mentality now, is to try to help as many players as I can to reach their full potential and be outstanding players and people.
Where do you keep your gold medals from the Worlds in 2015, 2016 when you coached the Team USA women?
Yeah, I mean, I have them in my office at home, and you know, along with, you know, like my first NHL goal and you know, 700 game puck I got when I think I was with the Devils then. And, you know, I've got some accolades up in my office. It's kind of my own, you know, personal space kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, it's right in there. I have a picture of the team. I have both medals there. I was fortunate enough to get two awesome rings that I generally just bring out when I go to Vegas, if I want to kind of bling it up a little bit, but it's, but you know, they're awesome. They're super cool. I'm certainly proud of those moments and proud of those teams.
You played 900 plus games in the NHL for a bunch of teams. What allowed you to have such a long playing career?
I think it's a combination of things. I think, you know, I mentioned it earlier, having the right, you know, mental mindset, being able to grind and go through the tough times. I mean, you know, being fortunate enough to stay healthy and then just, you know, just getting after it every day. I mean, I guess those would be kind of the things. It's tough. It's tough to have a long career. You have to be fortunate. You have to, you know, have some luck involved, staying healthy, and you have to be able to ride. It's tough. You know, the NHL is, I always say, it's fantastic when you're winning, and when you're not, it's tough. And there's so much parity in the NHL that, you know, it's tough to win. And so you have to be able to ride those highs and lows and try to keep them as even as you can. And then just, you know, come to work every day, ready to get better and go there.
Now, you play collegially at Bowling Green, you get drafted by the Capitals, but I'm interested to know what your personal expectations were when you turned pro. I mean, were you thinking NHL or bust? Were you like, let's see how this goes for a couple of years? What was your mindset there?
Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, I was a late round pick. I don't even think they have nine rounds anymore.
Yeah,
so
they don't.
Somebody brought that to my attention when I was coaching in Syracuse. They're like, yeah, you got drafted a round that's not even there anymore. So, but anyway, like it was, I didn't really know. You know, I was a Kansas City kid who took a chance, called a team in Toronto, said, can I come try out? They said, sure. I went up there. We had an unbelievable team. I think 10 kids got scholarships. We had Eric Lindros there. We won the All Ontarios. I got a scholarship back to BG. I go there. Rob Blake is there as our number one D. He's playing 30 minutes a night. I'm just watching him rip up and down the ice and hammer one-timers like I'd never seen. He turned pro at the end of the year, was in the Stanley Cup finals maybe with LA, like right away in 90, I guess that would have been 93.
Yep, 93.
Or no, it was 90. It was 1990. Yeah, because I went in 89, so it was like 91-ish. It was not, I turned pro in 93, so it had to have been like 90 or 91. You know, I got drafted, like you said. You know, my kids laugh. I didn't even get a call. I didn't even know. I got drafted on a Saturday. I got, you know, on Sunday, we were talking with some family friends and they said, oh, congrats on getting drafted. I said, no, I didn't get drafted. And they said, yeah, you did. We read in the paper. I said, well, nobody's called me. So sure enough, Monday, I got a phone call like, hey, we drafted you. Stay in school. Good luck. Like, so it was kind of one of those things.
You didn't even find out for like 48 hours?
Oh, no, nothing. I mean, it's a different time now, yeah, right? Yeah. People don't have cell phones. Like my kids are like, Dad, you played in the NHL. You didn't have a cell phone. How is that possible? I'm like, yeah. Boys, it wasn't in the Stone Age, but back in the early 90s, people didn't have cell phones.
There was no Twitter saying ninth round pick by the Caps, Ken Klee, right?
Exactly right. So, you know, and then it just, you know, my career really took off. The next year I got to play World Juniors for USA. You know, my things started happening for me. Again, I made the Olympic team traveling team roster. Then I blew my knee out. I think it was like the second or third game over in France. So that was obviously a big setback. But luckily, Bowling Green still had my scholarship. I went back. I rehabbed. End of the year, the cap said, we want to sign you. You know, I'm like, okay. But I still had one more year of college I could have done. But also I was like, I don't know if I'll ever be the same. So I kind of decided then to, you know, I was going to sign, give pro hockey a go. At the time, the Caps had four defensemen with 20 plus goals. I think it's the only time in NHL history. So again, I was like, okay, I might not be getting much of a look here, but you know what? I'm going to go to Baltimore and then on to Portland. We won a Calder Cup. You know, 2 years in the minors did me a world of good to kind of help my game, help me learn how to be a pro, you know, take care of myself, all those things that really I had no idea about. I think kids today are much more, they have many more resources to kind of help them when they're younger. But back then, again, we didn't have a nutritionist. We didn't have people telling you what to eat, what to drink, what not to do, how to train, as much. So, you know, and then I luckily Kevin Hatcher held out. And so there was a spot in training camp at my third year and I just played as hard as I could. And once I got in there, you know, tried to make Jim Schoenfeld, the coach, a fan. And luckily, you know, I did, you know, I had to play some wing to stay up. He came to me and said, hey, we have 70 all making way more than you and way more experience than you. Can you try wing to stay up here? And I said, I'll do whatever you need me to do. And again, that was just kind of my mindset was, if I want to stay in the NHL, I have to be willing to do anything they want me to do. And if you have that mindset, you have a chance. But if you don't, there's just too many players, too much, you know, there's just too much against you.
Gosh, it's amazing how when you talk to different athletes at any level, they get a break, they don't get a break, an injury here, good health there. In your case, Kevin Hatcher holds out, and that could have been the difference in, you know, a 900-plus game career or maybe a few years in the minors, and that could have been it, right? I mean,
100%.
You ever stop and think about sometimes just how maybe it went your way?
Yeah, I mean, no question. I mean, I, you know, try to be a good person, and hopefully good things will happen to you. Like, that's, you know what I mean? But you need help. Like, it's tough. I mean, there's very few Sidney Crosbys, Connor McDavids, you know, Kirill Kaprizov, who's just going to come into the league and going to be able to play. I mean, most other people, you know, they're going to have to fight their way in. And then once they get in, there's always people trying to take your job. So it's a tough life, but obviously it's a fantastic life. It's done so much for me and my family, the game itself, teaching us, you know, being good people, you know, work hard, life's not always fair, you know, all those kind of values that now I've pretty much tried to pass on to my own kids. And now they have all had, you know, just fantastic careers. I'm over the moon for all of them. So proud of them.
Those mid-90s Capitals teams, Ken, they produced a bunch of head coaches at a variety of levels. And then you have Keith Jones as well, who went into broadcasting, now he's helping run the Flyers on the business side and the hockey ops side. What was in the water in DC in the 90s that so many guys there turned into, you know, NHL coaches, AHL coaches, international coaches, et cetera?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I would say, you know, Jack Button and David Poile were a lot of it. You know, they were kind of at the leadership group of, you know, making sure they had the right kind of people. I had Barry Trotz, a rookie coach. I was a rookie player for the Baltimore Skipjacks. You know what I mean? It was just really I think, you know, I give a lot of credit to David and, you know, the late Jack Button for kind of, you know, really having a good culture there of this is the way we're going to do things and you got to be a pro every day. So, you know, it's, you know, I guess that could be it. You know, at the time when you're a kid, you're going through it. I just kept my head down and tried to go to work every day and take care of my business. But, you know, like you said, and looking back, there has been a lot of different characters. Obviously Jonesy's one of them. He's an absolute gem of a human being. And, you know, he was awesome on the air. He was awesome as a teammate. He was great on the air for all those years. And now, you know, it's exciting to watch him there in Philly.
How good was Peter Bondra?
Oh, he was lights out. I mean, he just had, you know, he could just bomb it from anywhere. He was just one of those dynamic offensive players. If he had just a little bit of space, he could make you pay. You wouldn't notice him for a good chunk of the game. And then all of a sudden, wham, you know, next thing you know, he's a 500 goal scorer and, you know, just crazy. He would tinker with his sticks like to no end. He'd have 12 dozen brought in and take out seven and send the rest back. And I mean, he had all these little things that helped him. And, you know, it obviously worked for him. He was an unbelievable player.
He also played with this guy named Jaromir Jagr, who is still lacing him up at age 51.
Oh, my God.
Are you surprised by that at all?
Again, he was just a fantastic player. You know, people ask me, you know, who's the toughest players I had to play against. Jagr always will be out of the first, you know, few names that I would throw out because he was just that combination of, you know, he was a giant. He was strong as an ox. He had skills. He had, you know, hands. He had puck skills. He could shoot. He could dangle you. He could hold you off with just his, you know, his hip and his bum. And you couldn't do anything. Like it was, you know, I mean, he was a giant before there were, you know, a lot of giants, you know, him, you know, and Eric Lindros, you know, when the bigger guys started really coming in, I thought I was a big guy at 215 pounds. And I tried to play that way, but, you know, then we just had some monsters coming in, the Jagrs and Lindrosses and players like that, where I'm like, okay, now I'm trying to hit 250. Now these are like, you know, middle linebacker size guys. Like, so yeah, he was just awesome. It's crazy to me that he absolutely loves the game. That is why he is playing. You know, he was my only critique of him at all as a teammate was, he was so hard on himself that if he wasn't the best player out there, he was upset with himself every night. And that's a tough bar to have to toe every night, especially in the NHL, right? I mean, if you're not at your best and you're not dominating, he was like, why am I not dominating? I need to be better. And so, you know, he loved the game. He would be there late at night. He wasn't a weight room guy. He would like push his stick against a concrete pillar to make his hands and forearms stronger and all this crazy like Rocky Balboa stuff that I'm watching him work every day. I'm like, how is this happening? It's unreal. He was just an unbelievable specimen of a player back then.
What do you remember about playing against Bill Guerin, the current Wild GM?
Billy G and I were actually roommates for Olympic tryouts. We spent a few weeks together in Brainerd. He had a super bad case of lace bite. You know, I've known him since, you know, back in those days. I think he's a 70 birth year. So we didn't play World Juniors together, but we did a lot of U.S. stuff together. I've known him since back then. He was an awesome combination of skill and speed and meanness. And he had all those kind of mixed together. You know, he was a fierce competitor. I loved playing against him. I liked it better when he was, you know, on my team at any of those USA things. But, you know, again, he had the full package. Like he was a big guy, strong. He could skate, he could shoot. You know, he had that edge to him. you know, a little bit, you know, as Boston would come out, he would be angry out there, you could tell. And, you know, it was just cool to kind of get to grow up in the league playing against him. You know, when he was with the Devils, I was with the Caps. Like, you know, when you play 14 years and guys are in your age group, right, you play a lot against them and kind of get to know them really well. So I'm certainly happy for him. I think he's doing a great job here. And again, like you said, a lot of my peers are in these kind of roles in the NHL, which is pretty awesome to see.
Was there a defense partner from your career you felt you had the best chemistry with?
Yeah, I mean, I play with so many great players. You know, some of the most fun was, I think, maybe playing with Sergei Gonchar, because he was just, you know, he's an all-star almost every year. Like, so I got to play a couple of years with him. I had to play my offside, which I did not like. But, you know, the coach said, hey, he wants to play with you. If you want to play with him, he's playing his offside, so that means you have to as well. And I was like, okay, I'll suck it up. I want to play with him, so we're going
to
do it. So
he preferred to play his offside?
He wanted to be able to – he had such great timing. I don't know if you remember, like, jumping into the hole, like when the puck's in the ozone down low, he would had perfect timing to jump in right at the right time, one-timer, boom, get, you know, lights out. Like, I mean, he just had it. And he wanted to come in off his offside. He was kind of elusive. He just felt it gave him more options from the dot all the way over than it did on his strong side. So yeah, he loved it.
In 2008, 2009, you played under Wayne Gretzky with the then Phoenix Coyotes. He didn't last long in the coaching ranks, but I've got to ask you, what was the great one like as a coach?
He was, you know, more than a coach. He's just a great human. He's a great person. He was always thinking of trying to help the guys. It was exciting. I mean, he was great with me. You know, I got there, I was 38, you know, obviously towards the end of my career, I knew it. I think everyone knew it. The next group of guys were like 31, two, like Shane Doan, Ed Jovanovski, Olli Jokinen, those kind of guys, Steven Reinprecht. And so he's like, hey, Kenny, I just, you know, we have a bunch of like 19 to 22 year olds. I think we had maybe 8 or 9 of them. And he's like, I just really need you to help teach them how to be pros. I don't know how many of them are going to work out, but we're really young here and we need help. You know, they kind of directed me toward a Keith Yandle right away, which he's a piece of work. I don't know if you've ever met him, but he's awesome kid, so much energy, best dancer that I've ever seen. You know, just unreal, but, you know, just trying to rein him in a little bit with his game and little things. And he was awesome. So yeah, I mean, they treated me, you know, Gretz treated me unbelievable. It couldn't have been better for my last year as a pro, last year playing, you know, just the way he treated me. I've never had in my entire career where we'd be at dinner and, you know, a bunch of us, you know, as you do, you go out for dinner the night before. And that's, you know, some of my favorite moments is getting to, you know, be with the boys the night before at a nice dinner. And all of a sudden, like, the waiter would be like, hey, your coach, you got your tab. You know, you guys are all good. And we're like, what? And like, you know, I'm like, I played in the NHL 14 years. No coach has ever bought my dinner before, you know, but that's just the way Gretz was. He was just so giving and just loved to see the boys out, you know, having a good time doing their thing and so generous. And it was really cool. It was definitely a neat experience.
From a defenseman's perspective, how much has the game changed?
It's changed a lot. I mean, obviously when they started putting the, you know, the stick rules, the no clutching, grabbing, you know, I had to evolve as a player. It was 04, 05, or else I was going to become extinct and a dinosaur. And luckily I was able to evolve and still play 5 more years. But for a lot of guys, that was the end of their career right then. When they changed those rules and said, hey, we want to let offensive players have more freedom to play. You know, so it's tough. It's tough to defend. We couldn't hold up anymore. You know, they would dump it in. We could hold up for our partners so they weren't getting run through the glass. Then they said, nope, you can't do that anymore. Your partner's just going to have to become a better skater or learn to peel himself off the wall, or a combination of both. So it was good. But I mean, the game's awesome right now. It's so exciting. You look at the skill level, the things kids can do. I mean, the things my own kids can do, like it blows me away how skilled they are, how, you know, how many things they can do with the puck, how they can shoot, how they can, you know, just do so many amazing things. It's really cool.
You mentioned coaching in Syracuse with the Crunch a couple seasons ago. I just want to get your take on how much different the American Hockey League is. I was in it for a long time from a staff standpoint, right? But you played in it. You mentioned the Baltimore Skipjacks. Then you go back to coach there just a handful of years ago. How much different was it for you?
It was good. I mean, to be honest with you, it was again, one of my favorite type coaching experience. Like people have asked me, like, would you want to coach in the NHL? It's a tough life in the NHL. It's games every other day. It's hard. Whereas the American League, you have guys who are so hungry to get to the NHL that they are listening to you. They are excited. They are, you know, I mean, they're young. They're hungry. They're trying to just get that next step, get a little break, get something to get there. So I loved it. It was great. We had a lot of Wednesday, Friday, Saturday games or Saturday, Sunday games. I was in Syracuse. My commuting was pretty close. We had Rochester, Utica, Binghamton, all close, you know, easy bus rides. It wasn't, you know, some of these Western League kids who bus, you know, 15 hours, or even my own son today is on a 10-hour bus ride from Muskegon to Dubuque, Iowa. And I was like, at, you know, in your late 40s, I don't know that I want to be riding the bus. Now I'm in my 50s, like riding the bus for, you know, 15-hour rides and all that sort of thing. I know, you know, I feel like my body has told me those days are past you. Like you're going to have to figure something else. But I loved it. It was great coaching those players. It was awesome to help an Eric Chernak, Anthony Cirelli, Matt Joseph. Like those are they were all rookies there when I was there. And it was, you know, it was awesome to help them, you know, be able to achieve their goal of making the NHL. And now obviously they're great NHL players.
How about some of those barns on the East Coast of the American League, the old jungle? You mentioned Binghamton. Obviously, Syracuse, I call games in that building. What an atmosphere
Memorial.
There. Yeah.
Yeah, it was something. I mean, I think I played maybe one game in Syracuse. They had just come in the league, and I think that was the lockout year of 94, 95 maybe. And so, you know, the lockout happened. I made the big club, but, you know, I said, I got to go to the minors. I have a wife. I got to get paid. I can't be locked out here. So I went down. I think I played a game there. I didn't even remember the building until I went back to coach. And then I was like, holy cow, this is old school here. So, you know, our locker rooms were on different floors and the coaches' offices and everything. And so, but it was fun. It was a cool atmosphere. They have a lot of great fan bases, which is really neat.
All right, before I let you go, and I really appreciate your time, I got something I call quick hits. They're just, it's five questions, and I just want the first thing that comes to mind. I read you moved around a bunch as a kid due to your dad's job. Where was your favorite stop growing up?
Probably Indianapolis. I mean, that's where I remember most of my time as a kid because I was, you know, 6 to 13 there, and it was a fun town. You had the 500, you had, you know, hockey was starting to get going there, and it was just a cool spot.
Give me two current NHL defensemen you'd start a team with.
Cale Makar, 100%. I just got to I've been working Avalanche games for Altitude, calling him to be watch him every night is definitely a treat and a pleasure. You know, he would be one. Who would be a second player? Vic Hedman. I mean, he's again, just an absolute horse out there on the ice. He can skate, he can shoot, he can be physical, he can block shots. You know, definitely those two would be, I guess, first to mind.
One player you grew up idolizing as a kid.
Bobby Orr.
Describe the rivalry between the USA and Canada.
It is a unbelievable, healthy hatred, excitement, respect, all kind of wrapped up into one.
I love that term, healthy hatred. I don't think I've heard that before. I like that.
Yeah.
One international city you visited through hockey that you'd like to go back to someday.
I would like to, when I coached the national team, we went to Malmo, and we actually won a world championship there, but it was, you know, it was just a really cool town, like by the river. It was just really interesting. Obviously when you're in a tournament, you don't have a lot of time to look around, but it was really neat. I enjoyed my time there.
He is Ken Klee, the new head coach of PWHL Minnesota. Their home opener Saturday, January 6th against Montreal. They're playing games at XL Energy Center. Ticketmaster. For all your ticket needs, please check them out. Support this great new women's league. I mean, six inaugural teams. Should be a great season. Seems like you guys got a good group there, Ken. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Ken Klee. My thanks to him. This is One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell, presented by Soda Stick. Get your original Minnesota-inspired goods. Use code 101 for 15% off. That's sodastick.com. Designed by Minnesotans for Minnesotans. Again, code 101 for 15% off your next order. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell.